Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I agree with everything that nice man just said. It is the Derek Shelton Show here on 93.7 The Fan. The Pirates manager is on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Shelty, I don't know if we ever got to the bottom of this. Were you hurt in any way that Ron didn't show up for that game in Fort Myers that you invited him to? I think that was your opener in spring training.
100%. You know, you threw out the end. I think he threw me the courtesy text opening day to kind of get over it. But,
yeah,
you know, I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, he kind of promised that, you know, that I'm going into retirement. This is what I'm going to want to do.
Yes.
I'm in Florida and just kind of bailed on me. So.
Yeah, it was you, Neil Walker, Joe Block. A bunch of people invited him and offered free beer, which he never turns down. So I would have been hurt as well. Let's get to the good stuff here. Jared Jones on the mound tonight against the Mets. And I know his last start, a couple bad pitches. Who cares? He was unbelievable in that game. With the swing and miss, he's been historically great so far. His starts are becoming an event. What do you expect tonight?
Yeah, just expect another good start. I mean, I think, you know, we have a young pitcher that really has good stuff. And the biggest thing is he's continued to throw strikes. I think that's the most important thing. I mean, we can talk about the swing and miss, and we can talk about, you know, the quality of the stuff. But the fact that he's been in the zone, that's probably the most important factor.
And it seems also, Shelty, like he's made some adjustments. Like it seemed like his opening start, he learned right away that no matter how hard you're throwing, if you throw it down the middle, good players like they have on the Orioles are going to hit it. He's really made adjustments to go into his off-speed stuff earlier, has he not?
I think he has. He's done a nice job. He's done a nice job making adjustments. I think to that first point is the big leagues is hard. It's really hard. And regardless if you throw it up there 100 or you got really good breaking stuff, if you make mistakes, major league players are going to you know, execute. And he has made adjustments, which is a really positive sign for us with a young player.
Shelty, before I ask the next question, I guess the precursor to that is how close is Grandal to coming back?
He should be going out on a rehab really soon. So it's not anything that's imminent. I mean, he's missed an entire spring training. I mean, I think he played, three spring training games. So we're going to have to build him back up. But it's more just running stuff than it is anything else. He's been doing catching. He's been doing offensive stuff. It's not live at bats. There's no way to replicate live at bats except for live at bats. So we just got to get him back on the field, this timing back.
Then the question becomes, you'll have three catchers, and Joey Bart is playing really well, and Henry Davis is struggling. I think those are just facts at the moment. So that's going to present an interesting situation, is it not?
Yeah, it will present us with a situation. I mean, I think, like, you've known me long enough that to know that I don't live in a speculative world, and I don't know what's going to happen between now and when Yaz comes off. I mean, we didn't know that Jason DeLay was going to go down and we were going to be able to acquire Joey Bart when the season started. So when we get to that bridge, we will cross it. But until then, you know, we're going to go with the guys that we have and you know, continue to play them.
We talked about Henry last week, and I think we agreed that he wants so badly to do well that maybe squeezing the bat a little tightly. Do you notice anything getting better? Because it looks like he's still really, really struggling.
Yeah, I mean, he had better bats in the last game in Philly. So I think to your point last week, it's going to be a work in progress. This is a young player that really wants to do well, and we have to probably try to take as much pressure off him as possible because, you know, he's in that go full accelerator mindset all the time. And I think also, just like, you know, Jared Jones making adjustments, Henry's learning that he has to make adjustments at this level on both sides of the ball because it's the big leagues and it's hard.
Yeah, the other day in Philly, he seemed to have a couple rough innings, but even Real Muto seemed to have some difficulties there. So, A, is that the way you saw that the other day? And then, B, it looked like he had a play to make last night on a Chapman pitch, and I realize it's Chapman, and it's, you know, a million miles an hour in the dirt, but he seemed to want a backhand to play where maybe he could have blocked it as a catcher. Is that a learning moment for him?
Yeah, 100%. Let's go to the second one last night. I mean, Chapman, 89-mile-an-hour slider. I think you're talking about the one to Stewart that got away. I think if you would ask Henry, he probably would do it again. You know, he would have gone to more of a block instead of the way he tried to catch it. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about a guy that's got elite stuff that's not easy to catch, and he made a tough pitch, but it's something that Henry will definitely learn from. And to your first point, 100%. The other day, and I mean, JT Realmuto's got multiple gold gloves, and I don't know what happened that day. I don't know if it was the shadows, but neither guy looked like they could see the last three innings of the game. And that's not a great place to be when you're back there and guys are rushing it up there 100 on both sides. And, you know, you're not getting as good a look as you want. But I would definitely say that day was attributed to shadows.
Pirates manager Derek Shelton on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. Kutch's 300th home run. Nice little moment in Pirate history. What was running through your mind? Was it a no-doubter for you? And do you think maybe, as he kind of alluded to after the game, I don't know if he said it was weighing on him, but he was definitely thinking about it a lot. Does this maybe free him up a little bit?
I think so. I mean, you know, he had to hit for us last night to get us on the board to start that. I mean, never having been a good player, never having been near a milestone, I don't know what that feels like. But I do think that it was something that was on his mind. And, you know, it's unfortunate. He got to 299, you know, last year, mid-late season, and then had the injury. So it's not only something that it's this year, but he's had it for, you know, a culmination of about 8 months or 7 months. So I really think it was nice for him to, you know, get that just kind of taken care of. To your first point, yeah, it was a really cool moment. And I think you can see by the way our dugout reacted, and then I don't know if you saw any of the stuff in the clubhouse afterwards, just how people feel about Kutch as a person and as a player. It was a really special moment for our group.
That's awesome. What I didn't actually, what happened in the clubhouse? Was it individual tributes or just beer and shaving cream flowing or what?
Well, no, I mean, we got him a nice bottle of something and presented it to him, but it wasn't even that. It was just more, you know, the way the guys embraced him as he came in. You know, he was the last person to came in because obviously he did the post game on TV, and just the reaction, that just genuine affection for, you know, a person and a teammate and a player. It was a really cool moment to see. And I think in our dugout, I mean, that was a 7-2 game at the time, and we played really well in that game, but the emotion of him getting it out, running around the bases. I mean, you saw the million-dollar smile that we've seen in Pittsburgh for so long. And I think there was some sense of relief for everybody because everybody wanted it for him so bad.
Shelty, I think I've asked you this question probably once per year just out of curiosity. And I do remember it really stands out that the first year I asked about, you know, who's the unquestioned leader in there, and you mentioned Tyon without hesitation that year. Is it Kutch this year, or is it multiple people?
I think it's multiple people. I mean, Kutch does it in a different way because he's been here, and he's like the elder statesman, and, you know, he gets it. He's the person that, you know, people go to for things. I do think Martin Perez has kind of stepped in that role a little bit with our pitching group. I think Rowdy has kind of done that a little bit. And we're also seeing – you know, Brian and Key do it in different ways the more they get comfortable.
And the other thing is that I had down here, I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase it. When Chuck Tanner was here, players have referred to him as creating that the most important thing from a leader, the manager really, in baseball, but also the team leaders, is a relaxed atmosphere day to day that never gets too high, never gets too low. That is more important than, you know, managing a bullpen, calling a hit and run, a steal, whatever, the X's and O's. Is that a good way to describe it, that you want to have a place where players feel relaxed enough where they can perform?
Yeah, it's interesting that came from Chuck Tanner, because that was even a different time, you know, when he managed. But I definitely agree with that, and I think it holds up. You have to stay consistent, and I think over the years, you know, you and I and Cookie used to talk about culture and how important culture is in a clubhouse. And I think that starts with me and the staff, but definitely it's the players. I mean, last night, you know, we played well for six innings and didn't play well, you know, and we've played well throughout the season. We have to come in the same as we did after the Philly game the other day where we played well. Like, we have to wash away three innings of not very good baseball and come in and realize, like, we've played pretty good baseball, and that's important. So I would agree that with Chuck's statement there, it is very important from the top down that you continue to just maintain that consistency.
When somebody's on the mound, Chapman last night, we talked about Bednar last week, you ultimately make the call, obviously, you're the manager, as to how long to keep a guy in when he's struggling. Now, he got thrown out of the game last night. But when it comes to just keeping a guy in there or taking him out, I'm talking relievers mostly here, how much does Oscar influence the call that you make?
No, we have a process that we go through even pregame of the different lanes that we like and who we like. But ultimately, it's my decision. You know, it's my decision when we're going to get guys up and when we're going to take guys out. But, you know, we talk about it as a group going through, just like probably every team does now, where there's select hitters that we have that we think it's the best matchup for that pitcher. But in terms of the timing of it, you know, with the exception of the three batter rule or the rules of how you have to keep guys in the game, it's my decision.
What happened on the Chapman ejection last night? He uttered some magic words or what?
Yeah, well, obviously, this is evidently, that's funny you asked. I had actually just turned to get Contreras up in that situation. And as I had my back turned, Chappie got ejected. And so I didn't actually see it till I watched the replay. And then when I went out to talk to the umpire, he told me that he said some things in Spanish and he understood Spanish that he didn't like. And Chappie got ejected. So, you know, I mean, it was a veteran guy. He was frustrated. I think, like you said, we had to punch out earlier in the inning that we didn't do. And then his command kind of got away from him a little bit. And, you know, he said some things he probably shouldn't have said. And because of it, he got asked to leave.
You've had an inexperienced catcher this season, so I am curious. I was talking to a couple of people about this, and I didn't know the answer. Do all the pitch calls come from your catcher, or are they coming from the bench a lot of times?
No, they don't come from the bench. I mean, we go through a game plan with Henry of what it is, and then some of the starters will call their own pitches. You'll see that, you know, that some of the guys have the pitch com on their glove or on their belt, and they'll do it themselves. But overall, I mean, you know, whether it's been Delay or Henry or Joey Bart, game calling wise, I think we've done a really, really efficient job. I mean, you talked about, you know, Jones going to his breaking ball. I mean, that was partly Henry doing that in the last start. So, you know, that's a combination, and there's a lot of work that goes into it. And as you pointed out, you know, asking about Yaz earlier, Yaz has been really helpful for our young pitching group because he spends a lot of time with them, talking to them about, you know, pitch calling stuff.
Derek Shelton on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. Couple more minutes here with the Derek Shelton show. We were talking about O'Neill Cruz earlier, Shelty. He's had some incredible moments, but he's striking out just a prodigious amount here and not walking a lot. Is there something in particular that he's struggling with, a certain kind of pitch, anything in general?
Yeah, I think we're seeing the effects. We thought we may see it at one point of a young player that missed a year. And to me, it looks like he's just gotten too passive. I mean, there's too many before two strike balls in the zone that he's just not offering at, and we need him to offer at, just because of the fact that him just putting the ball in play, there's so many good things that are going to happen. And I honestly think we're seeing a little effect of, you know, struggles because of not having played in a year, and we're just going to have to continue to grind through that and grind through his at-bats.
I just noticed, Shelty, that I don't know if you knew this yet today, Whitey Herzog has passed away. Did you have any interactions with him over the course of your career? I'm sure you watched his teams as you were growing up.
Yeah, that actually, I did not know that. That actually makes me sad. I mean, you know, we're talking about one of the greatest managers in our game. You know, having grown up in the Midwest and him managing in the Midwest and, you know, had one of the cooler nicknames in the game, the White Rat. That's sad that, you know, baseball's lost a really good baseball person. Have not had much interaction with him other than just admiration from, you know, afar for someone that really was a good manager. I think he was actually a manager and a GM at one point, which that seems like an that seems like that would not be a task anyone would want.
I wouldn't think so, especially this day and age. Shelty, thank you for the time. Good luck today.
All right. Thanks. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. That's Pirates manager Derek Shelton. Say goodbye to Shelty, City Limits. There he goes. Shelty always says goodbye. He used to say goodbye to Horse, and then he said goodbye to Folsy, and now City Limits.
Very nice of him.
Life has come full circle, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's cool to be able to talk to him every week.
What was the most interesting thing you heard there?
Nothing necessarily stood out as just huge news other than probably Grundahl. He's about to begin a rehab assignment, and the fact that he's been so influential with pitch calling makes me believe that one way or another, he's going to be on the active roster when called upon.
Yeah, and I think that may be sooner rather than later, although I did hear Shelty say it, you know, that he still has to see live pitching for a while. But the most interesting thing I heard was O'Neill Cruz. Too passive, maybe. Like, I was tempted to praise him earlier for being a little more patient, maybe, and for going the opposite way and for all of that stuff, maybe a different two-strike approach. But I get what Shelty's saying there for sure. Like, if you're not offering on drivable pitches, you know, before you get to two strikes, you're putting yourself in a bad position. Just be Cruz, you know? Let's see a little more swing for the fence type stuff.
Yeah, and I'm kind of concerned with them just in general. They take a ton of pitches, which is good. It's good to be able to build up pitch counts, but a ton of third strikes looking.
They have to lead the league in struck out looking. They have to. Can you look that up? There has to be a stat.
Yeah,
there's
somebody
a stat for
that
everything
stat
on
me,
earth.
And I'm looking for it now.
There's literally a stat for everything that happens on a baseball field. This one, like, isn't really, you know, deep analytics. Which team leads the league in struck out looking? I have all the confidence in the world that you can find that, City Limits. I forgot to ask him about the Connor Joe play. I mean, it was pretty obvious. It looked like he saw somebody at first covering the bag, and then he realized, oh my God, there is nobody at first covering the bag, and it ended very, very poorly with a baseball blooper.
It was a middle school play.
Do you have the call from the Mets?
Oh, yes, I do. Oh, man, this was
pretty good.
Insane.
And McNeil flies one out to right. Joe coming on, and he makes the catch. No tag. Now it comes late as Joe lost it, and the Mets get a gift run.
Oh, my God.
What happened to Connor Joe?
He spiked it. He was in between throwing it hard to home or throwing
it
to the second baseman, Triolo, and he just spiked it.
This is a volleyball game. He gets a kill on that one. Unfortunately, it's not volleyball.
Oh, my word.
Wait, do we have the block call? Because that was pretty good as well.
We
might get a you can hear the calliopes from here to Sewickley on this one, but we got something even more tasty.
Swinging a little soft liner out to right. Joe races in and makes the catch. And Lindor was late to tag, and he'll still end up scoring. What happened?
Keep that little clip there for things that happen in the show. What happened?
What happened?
And also, yeah, you can put that right up there with You Dog You from Bob. Do you still have that one?
You Dog You from Bob?
Yeah.
Oh, how could you forget?
You Dog You.
And I'll combine that with Joe Block saying what happened. Do we still have Calliope's from here to Sewickley?
Hey, Bob.
Is that anywhere on there?
Oh, it's in here somewhere.
I guess this brings to mind the biggest pirate gaffe you've ever seen. And I don't think that anything... Listen, was it 2 years ago? They had more legendary gaffes than any team in baseball history. I'm sorry.
Oh, the Calliope's can be heard from here to Sewickley.
That's so good.
That year we had... Key Brian Hayes eating during a play. Remember that at third?
Yeah, the sunflower seeds.
He broke out the sunflower seeds as a guy was rounding third behind him. You had, who was it with the with the cell phone?
A lot happened at third, yes. Rodolfo Castro.
Rodolfo Castro.
The cell phone.
The cell phone fell out at third. You had losing a game on an infield pop-up where somebody rounded the bases. And then you had the legendary, that this was where the Calliope's came from, was the Will Craig play, which is, you don't have that in there, do you? Like the actual play call?
No, thankfully not.
he tried to start a rundown between home and first. I think he's the first man in history who did that. He is the first. I think. Nobody else ever did that.
The Cubs players were laughing at him.
The Calliopes could be heard from here to Sewickley. And then this is just unfortunate. Stuff happens to all of us, you know?
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paul fell and hurt his ribs the other day walking his dog, for God's sakes. But it wasn't on national television. It wasn't on Sportsnet Pittsburgh. You know what I mean?
What happened?
I fell. What was that?
What happened?
Stuff happens. Connor Joe seems like a really good guy, and he's been a pretty good player. But my God, that's gonna be on baseball bloopers forever. He threw the ball directly into the ground. It looked like one of these disastrous ceremonial first pitches, like Mike Wilbon's from a couple years ago at Wrigley, where he did the same thing. I think he threw the ball directly into the ground.
Like 50 Cent did.
Did he do that too? Remember,
50 Cent like threw it into the opposing dugout.
Did Wiz Khalifa throw out the first pitch on the same day that Michael Keaton ripped the Pirates as one of their as their guest of honor? I can't remember.
No.
Wiz Khalifa threw out the first pitch on McCutcheon's final game as a Pirate, or at least what looked to be that one year. I seem to remember that.
Yeah, I think so. I was at that game.
But this one's up there, and I always like to hear these things over again. So can I hear the Mets call of this play? Because what did the guy say? Oh, my God.
About twice he said it.
And McNeil flies one out to right. Joe coming on, and he makes the catch. No tag.
Oh, my God.
Now it comes late as Joe lost it, and the Mets get a gift run.
Oh, my God.
What happened to Connor Joe?
He spiked it. He was in between throwing it hard to home or throwing it easy to the second baseman, Triolo, and he just spiked it.
The second one is so, like, dismissive. Like, you saw something horrible and want to be nowhere near it.
Those guys are great. They're
oh
so authentic.
God.
So authentic. That's just like us watching on TV.
And that leads us to the block call again.
Swinging a little soft liner out to right. Joe races in and makes the catch. And Lindor was late to tag, and he'll still end up scoring. What happened?
I love that. And then finally, Will Craig, the Calliopes. That's an all-time great call, I think, when Will Craig instigated a rundown between home and first.
Oh, the Calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
Is that not great?
And it's just such a great out-of-context clip.
Yeah.
Can be used for so many different things.
Do you have? Exactly.
What are the Calliopes?
Calliopes are laugh. Are they laugh?
The laughters?
Laughter? Is that what a calliope is? Like a little shot of laughter? Is that a calliope? I think so. Do you have a definition there?
That's what I'm looking for.
It's a keyboard instrument resembling an organ, but with notes produced by steam whistles. I didn't have that on the old bingo board, did you?
No, fascinating.
Used chiefly on showboats and in traveling fairs.
Series of whistles with steam compressed air. Interesting.
It is.
Mark that down on something you learned today.
Yeah. You don't happen to have the call of Hayes eating during the game or Castro's phone popping out, do you?
No, I don't. I'll get a look for the phone. That might be in here.
Boy, would that be good. Is the Will Craig thing the greatest blooper in Pittsburgh sports history?
It's up there.
I mean, there were other higher profile. I'm not talking about like a Neil O'Donnell interception. You know, that's not really a blooper. It's a guy threw a bad intercept. You know what I mean about a blooper. Bill Buckner was a blooper.
The blooper of all bloopers.
Yeah.
The biggest moment.
What's the biggest blooper in Pittsburgh sports history? Am I missing an obvious one here?
I don't think so.
Oh, we just saw it. Letang and Malkin scored on their own net.
Yeah, that's one.
On a delayed penalty. The good news being the Penguins actually scored on the power play.
Remember the game at Wrigley Field when Gregory Polanco tried to make the catch and just fell over himself?
Yeah.
The ball dropped. Pirates lost.
I do remember that one. Yeah. You know, people say the Barry Bonds thing, Sid Bream, that's not a blooper. That's just a play. You know the difference between a bad play and a historically bad play and a blooper. We all do. Don't we?
Yeah, we do.
What else in hockey? Was there another one in hockey that I'm missing? Is anyone texting us? Feels like we're in a vacuum here. I feel like I'm in an empty cave. Who am I talking to?
Somebody said they believe calliopes have to do with circuses. I don't know if that's true. An instrument of music on a merry-go-round?
I don't care anymore what it is.
Nothing else, though, about the biggest blunders, bloopers, whatever.
Polanco.
Jose Lean, 92.
That's not a blooper. It's an error. I mean, if the ball had been going 2 miles an hour and went through his legs like Buckner, then it's a blooper. Somebody texted me Polanco running like a newborn giraffe at Wrigley Field. Is that the one you were referencing?
Yeah, that's the one I said.
None of that. Not even Buckner is it to me. I know the Buckner one is a bigger moment, city limits. None of that. You realize that none of that is in the same universe as launching a rundown between home and first when all you have to do is step on the bag. That, like, that's
so bad.
That's one of the all-time sports bloopers in any sport. And I don't think people might know about it. If you just saw it, it wouldn't necessarily fit on a blooper reel.
Well,
but it's an all-time mental gaffe.
It's like Will Craig was trying to outsmart the Cubs and try to make them think too much to where they made a Josh Bell-like throw and threw it into the dugout or in the stands.
I don't know what the hell he was doing. Plexico, somebody reminded me, fumbled during a play. He spiked the ball during a play. Do you remember that?
What about Chase Claypool signaling first down with 40 seconds left in Minnesota?
When we mention these, can you add Block saying the calliopes could be heard from here to Pittsburgh? So here, let's practice for a moment, city limits. What about Claypool, the time that he signaled first down on a last-minute drive where every second was important?
Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
Somebody helpfully direct messages me that, yes, they are musical instruments from a merry-go-round, which it's helpful, and I appreciate that. There's got to be another hockey one. What's the hockey one that we're missing? I mean, the all-time Penguins gaffe is Letang and Gino, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably a little bit of recency bias there.
No.
There has to be a couple more, but
no,
that
no,
one
no,
was
no.
Bad.
The only time I've ever seen that in the history of hockey, little limits, is when a guy's in the other team's zone and, like, passes it back to the point and it goes past the guy all the way down into the net. They scored on a drop pass into their own net.
On a power play.
That's the only way it could happen.
Right.
Because nobody was there.
Delayed penalty.
Right.
Just which makes it all the more worse.
That's one of the worst plays in the history of sports as well.
Somebody says Gunnar Olszewski, kickoff, fair catch out of bounds. Remember that one?
Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
That one was great.
How about the mere fact, and I want to hear Joe Block here, the mere fact of Mike Tomlin putting Najee Davenport on kick return duty.
Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
Good gracious.
God bless me.
Steve Smith of the Oilers with a goal into his own net in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, but I'm looking for Pittsburgh gaffes here.
Jari gaffes in the playoffs.
Jari's
gaffe. Terrible. Yeah,
Jari assisted on the game-winning goal for the Islanders against himself with a horrible pass. I wonder what Joe Block thought of that.
Oh, man, how bad.
Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
That's a great one. I mentioned Plex.
People keep texting in Jerome Bettis' fumble in Indianapolis.
Yeah, no, that he could have been Bill Buckner. That's not your ordinary fumble, except it got erased.
That counts, Joe.
Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
There would have been no calliopes on that one.
Remember when Lloyd McClendon melted down and took the pace?
Yeah, I mean, that was a great moment. I don't look at that as a blooper. I look at that as a legendary moment. from legendary Lloyd.
Mike Tomlin standing on the field during the Jacoby Jones kickoff return.
I just thought of that and was going to mention it. And I still don't believe he did that intentionally. I actually believe him in the end that he was looking up at the scoreboard to get his positioning, but it was giving him reverse positioning. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, he wanted to look up at the scoreboard. Better view.
Barrasso giving up a goal from center ice. Not really a blooper. You know what we mean by blooper. I think we've exhausted this topic.
Barry Foster's non-kickoff return against San Francisco years ago. Many people are texting in.
Non-kickoff. Oh, my God, yes. Yeah, when the ball went into the end zone, yes.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a live ball.
Yeah, that was bad. The Gunner one is one of my personal favorites. Limus Swede dropping a ball right in his hands. Again, borderline because it was a huge moment and it was right in his hands. I'll give him a blooper for that, and I'd love to hear if Block had been calling that Steelers-Ravens game.
Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
And then it looked like he faked an injury. I mean, when did he get injured? All he did was have a ball drop out of his hands, and then he went down in a heap on the field. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Anybody else with anything?
I thought about, remember when Antonio Brown against Miami in like a snow game at Heinz Field ran out of bounds at like the 13-yard line when he could have easily scored
yes.
like a flea flicker play? I was at that game.
I do remember that.
Ugh.
Somebody else, Todd, tweets me and says, not a blooper, but what about the Pirates player who plunked the Brewers wiener mascot? That was headed in a bad direction. What was his name? I wrote a whole thing about him. Remember the guy, he hit the mascot with a bat?
I can picture it in my mind, but I can't figure out the name. How about Deontay Johnson thinking that the play was over this last year?
Yes!
The fumble.
There we go, Joe Block.
There we go.
Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
Yes.
Roosevelt Nick celebrating the non-first down fake punch in New Orleans.
Yes, I think that when he got up, it was like they were 3 yards short on a fake punt, and he celebrated the first down. Who was the guy? Now it's going to drive me crazy. Brewers mascot, Pirates. There you go. We'll get it in a second. Are you kidding me? Oh, there he is, Randall Simon. Suspended for 3 games. The lead might be worth reading out loud here. I don't know what it says yet. Here we go. You ready for this, Limits?
Let's hear it.
And Joe Block might be appropriate here. This is from the LA Times, July 12th, 2003. You ready for this? People around the country woke up. Newspapers were sort of still in vogue then. And I quote, first baseman Randall Simon of the Pittsburgh Pirates was suspended for 3 games and fined $2,000 by Major League Baseball Friday for hitting one of the Milwaukee Brewers sausage mascots with his bat.
Yeah, the texters have piled in on that too. Randall Simon.
I actually wrote about that where I called the mascot, as I recall. I think it was, what was her name? I called her up and I interviewed the mascot. She didn't think it was a big deal, if I'm remembering correctly. Maybe I don't remember anything these days. There's a big old hole that goes right through the soul. Man, that's the way it's going to feel if the Penguins miss here. They played a really good game last night. Here to talk about that and these final days of the regular season, Stanley Cup champion Jay Caulfield, brought to you by McVay Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. He's on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Jay, I apologize for the delay. Man, this is frustrating. It's also, you know, people are biting their nails every single night for hours at a time here. Do you think they get in?
Yeah.
What chance do you give it of happening that Philly wins and Montreal wins tonight?
Yeah, I think, I felt like Montreal was going to get one of the two, and it could be that last night was their opportunity being up the way they were, but I don't have, if you're a Detroit fan, if there's a Detroit, you're probably not having a lot of faith. I think Montreal could do it. I mean, just going to the start, the goaltending, all that stuff. And I also think Philly's waiting for Washington, and they still feel like they have a chance to get in. And Philly plays the game hard every night. They're gonna make it difficult. But the surprise was, Joe, I mean, truly, Washington beat in Boston last night. So, you know, it was one thing if you have one team, but you have two falter. And I do think the Penguins, whether the Islanders don't need a game. So that being said, I think the way the Penguins are playing, Joe, I think even if they win in the Island and they both needed it, I think the Penguins are the better team. And they're showing that. And but it's going to be, you just need one team. You know, you just need a little bit. You need a lot of help, right? You need both teams to kind of go down. But I still think there's a possibility, because I think Washington could have a tough time in Philly, and I think Detroit's going to have a tough time in Montreal. So we'll see how it plays itself out. I think it would have been nice if they – not nice, but here, we get to watch and see what happens in whatever game tomorrow night. But if all three games were at the same time, it would be quite entertaining for everybody involved.
Jay Caulfield on the line. How did your golf round go this morning, Jay? What'd you shoot?
Joe, I shot an 8. I keep telling you, I had an 82 today. I kind of do the same. I make the same mistakes and do some good things. And so an 82. Beautiful day, though. Rob King, Kevin Young played with us today, hits the ball a long way. Everybody kind of shot about the same, Joe, in the low 80s.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I shot a 92 yesterday. I'm still waiting for my invite. One of these days we have to get out a private screening, and you can judge if I'm good enough to play. I can beat Rob King on a given day.
Any given day. That's what they say. That's very true. So, plus Rob is wonderful to play with. So, okay, Joe, we will get that done, and then we will get that done this summer.
Okay. Yes.
That's what we'll do.
It's a deal. All right, back to the Penguins.
Right.
I thought they played really well last night. It was notable. I expected it, but it's still notable that Sully is going with Nedeljkovic, and that Tristan Jarry, they just are not turning to him, Jay. And I can't help but wonder what that means for Jarry's future here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, right now, you had a ride. You just had to go with the – you know, there's a couple things that were surprising over the last little bit. I know there was an article out. I think Marty Brodeur made a comment that they're easier, they're softer on the goaltenders, you know, where guys used to play 60-plus games. And, you know, it's a different era. But I heard Nedeljkovic's response to it that, you know, it's a different world. You know, they travel across country and all these kind of things that go with it, play in every city. Well, I remember our games. We went out west, too. We did the same thing. Guys didn't charter. You know, they charter now. Everything is a little bit... You know, they're treated extremely well. But playing in the NHL before, you were flying, you weren't busing, which is being treated extremely well. But the way the goaltenders are, it's a feel between the coaching staff, Andy Kyoto, Mike Sullivan, all of them probably talk about it. And if a goaltender seems like he's flat, then you would make a move. And I thought the only game that Ned looked like he maybe was, you know, could have been tired or fighting a little bit would have been the game against Boston, where a couple, you know, the big rebound, stuff like that. But the fact of the matter is, Joe, every night that he's playing the game, he's giving them that fighting chance to win, right? So you're Mike Sullivan, you're riding it. And what does that mean for Jarry going forward? I don't know. I mean, it's a business now, and what's going on? He's got a big contract, but a favorable contract to somebody who wants something different. Sometimes people need, I don't know what's going to take place, but change of scenery could always be good for something. I don't know, but he's going to be if something comes up with that, he's a favorable number for 4 more years.
Yeah.
Compared to what's going on in the league. And the Djokovic, it's going to be something that they'll look at across the board, but certainly the guy that's earning your points is the guy you stay with, and he's riding him all the way to the end.
Well, let's get back to these other games tonight for a minute. Obviously, the Flyers are favored, and they have everything to play for, and they've been waiting on the Capitals, who are playing back-to-back nights, so I don't see how anybody could be surprised if the Flyers win that game. The other game I'm interested from this perspective, Jay, the Red Wings reacted understandably, and their fans last night, like they had won the Cup or gotten into the playoffs. They haven't done anything yet. I'm just wondering what the emotional rebound will be like for them tonight, and if the Canadians are going to play with a ton of pride tonight. I wonder about both of those things. You?
Yeah, I would think first of all, for excitement for Detroit that they're on the cusp of getting in and they can control it. You know, outside we know about Washington, that's still now involved. But the fact that they have it in the palm of their hands, and, yeah, their reaction was up, I mean, was big time. I think it was because of the way the comeback. They were down they were down big, and they made a big comeback. That makes the excitement level, you know, that much better, Joe. And you're right. How are they going to respond? I think when you have 60 minutes ahead of you and you have a chance to get in with what you do tonight, I'd expect Detroit to have the same kind of, you know, get after it. With that, Lucas Raymond has been the guy that's really, really been driving them. I mean, we know, I know Dylan Larkin and all that, but Lucas Raymond has been the guy that's doing it. I think they're going to come out and have a good game. I would be just looking at the goaltending side of it. Lyon did it last year for Florida. I think he's been up and down for Detroit. It's going to come down to that, Joe. And if they get good goaltending, solid goaltending, then I think Detroit can come away. I agree with you about Washington going into Philly. It's going to be tough. That's going to be a tough one. They're beat up, but TJ Oshie's back in the lineup. When he's in the lineup, they're a different team. So they could get something. But again, I'm going to fall to the goaltender. Is Lindgren going to have a good night? Philadelphia generates a lot of opportunities. I think they're both, it's up in the air for both. I think it's 50-50 that they could, you know, Washington could win, Philly could win. I think the same thing about Detroit and Montreal. That's why the Penguins are, you're sitting there, and I said this before, I said it to you last week. All these other teams that are in it, like if you're New York, you're Carolina, and it looks like it would be New York now anyway. If you're New York, I do believe the one team they don't want to have get in, and I believe this. The Penguins are playing a much better style of hockey, and the numbers are showing it. And you know, they've rode with Nedeljkovic. I'm going to bounce back to that for 1 second. It's not like his numbers were through the roof. He had a 900 save percentage over these 12 games. But the Penguins, the way they played, and the timely saves that he has made that possible. But the offense, what they're producing, Bunting is the difference maker with this lineup, too. He's a difference maker with Malkin. He's a difference maker in the power play right now. And I think that's going to be, if the Penguins get in, and I know you could, some people would poo-poo it, but the fact of the matter is they're going to be difficult. And they beat New York when they haven't been playing the greatest hockey. I think the first round, the Rangers could be vulnerable if the Penguins get in. I think they're hoping that they do not. I think that's the one thing. They hope it's not the Penguins. They'll take anybody else. The Penguins would be the more difficult out for them.
Jay, I think within this season-ending run, there's been some good signs actually for next season. One of them you just mentioned is Bunting, and that should have been a goal last night, right? Yep. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Well, that one, listen, I don't know what they – I'll go to the Eller one first. I have no idea what they're seeing with the Eller one. I know he's in the blue paint, but you can be in the blue paint now. I think they almost should go back to that again. If your skates are in the blue paint, then disallow the goal. They have no – I swear, Coachy – nobody knows what's going on or what to say. The Bunting one, Joe, I felt like because he got on the goaltender's stick, not on purpose. He pivoted and his skate blade was on top of Saro's stick and maybe prevented him from making a normal move. That's the only thing I can think that they looked at and called on that. But the fact of the matter is a great play. He's great he's in the pocket. He's moving around. He's in front of the net. He's all over the place, but they're making, with him in that position, everything else kind of opens up. I mean, the flanks open up because they have to protect the pocket. He moves around extremely well in that area too. You saw him, you know, in the true pocket. Then you see him down low in front of the net, and he's very good at it. And he's been a difference maker.
Yeah, I really like him moving forward. Also, the Shea St. Ivany third defense pair. I know, you know, we have to see it over time. I get it, but I'm intrigued by that. And Drew O'Connor, I think, can be a pretty high-impact player moving forward. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'll go to the D pair first. I think the St. Ivany, since he's every game, I kind of focused. I've shown a lot of things about him, like little plays. He's looked extremely calm every game. And if you look over the games that he's been in, the games that he's played from his first one, it's been extremely – probably some of the toughest competition from, you know, Colorado, all those things, the high-end talent. And he's looked extremely comfortable, and I think he's gotten better every game. And I think Shea benefits the two of them combined. They're comfortable. They're comfortable with each other. They played in the minors together. I think that as a pair, I think this has made the Penguins deeper. I just think they've been better. And that's no knock to what Chad Ruedel was doing or anything like that or great. This is a better pair right now for this team. Snidney's got a long reach, big body, and he uses it in his own little way. He's not, you know, it's he gets in the bodies. He's probably frustrating to play against. Has a great gap, a great stick, very intelligent when he plays the game. I think it's a really, really good pair, and I think he's been a true difference maker and somebody that's young and going to be better every game he plays. I agree with you on that, Joe. And the O'Connor thing, yeah, I think he's – I think we talked about it last night with Brian Trottier, and I think that it's a player that's kind of growing and – yeah, I mean, it's a player that's grown up right in front of your eyes kind of thing, even within this year, because he's played up. He's been in the top line. He's been second line. He's been in the third line, going down the fourth. He can play anywhere in the lineup. And he certainly has been – he made a play. We saw the goal against Boston, the shorthanded goal, maybe a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, chipped the puck deep and got after it on the forecheck, which would have been fine too. Then he made a great move. I totally agree, Joe, on those things. It's certainly – there's certainly bright spots and young players and young legs that are being difference makers in what's happening with the Penguins. And I think – Bunning included, as we just said, that he is truly their power play every time now pretty much out there looks the first unit looks dangerous to me. And I think they're all doing a great job getting in the net, which is difficult as well for the opposition.
Great stuff, Jay. Thank you. And we'll talk hopefully about a playoff series next week. I have, bad feelings, but also who knows what could happen. Hopefully we're talking about that next week.
I hope so, too, Joe. And great to talk to you.
You too. Have a good one. See you, man. That is Jay Caulfield. I do have sneaky suspicion that this could happen tonight. I mean, the Flyers are favored, so obviously that wouldn't be a surprise. And then you got to go into Montreal, back-to-back nights, and make sure you get 2 points, not one. And I do think, as bad as the Canadiens have been, there's a certain pride that franchise has. I don't think they're going to lie down, in other words. I don't.